Hey, Nora, thank you. This is Janet, and we're in the studio today with Noonie Man. He's going to be telling us about what's going to be happening tomorrow with the Indians, and we're going to play some of his brand new CD. Noonie, what's the name of your CD?
Name of my CD is Gumbalaya Nerny Fire.
Right on, right on. So we're going to play a couple tracks off that, and then we're going to jump into our very special guest, or our very special interview today for Mardi Gras.
It's degrees to it. It's different levels to it. It's like a baby has to crawl before you walk. And you have to learn how to sew. You have to know when you sing in two-way pocket way, you have to know what that means. You go this way, you go that way. Two-way pocket way, make you run three ways. You have to understand what you're saying. You have to know, because if I'm meeting another Indian, and this Indian throws his stick down to me on the ground, that's a trouble signal. That means he wants trouble. So, I mean, which is not really like that anymore, but it was. But still to this day, you need to teach each Indian from a child those different chants, those signals. Teach that child how to sew. So when that child can say, I'm the flag boy of the nation, he means that. Or that child say, I'm Lil Chief, won't bow, don't know how. He has to mean that. You know, it's like he was saying, it's religion. We call it religion. I know how to sew. I know how to build. I know how to stick. I put it all together.
They're chicken in the gumbo bar from way downtown. Oh. See, they stirring that pot boy, gonna rock a while. Oh. That gumbo lion ball, nine fire. Oh. That gumbo lion, a nine fire. Say hooping and hollering.
Gumbo lion, a nine fire.
Say bump, bump, adore.
Gumbo lion.
I like chicken and the gumbo.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say hey now, man.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
What you been told?
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Then we put you in the office.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Now you're losing control.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
I bump on the door.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say we need help. Chicken in a gumbo.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Sit down in Japan.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say let's get together.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say we stuck together.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say hitting that red cross.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say don't break the banner.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Tell them run call FEMA.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say to your best now.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say let's all get together.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say hey now, hey there.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Hey, young caller.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say bump, bump, adore.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say let's get together.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say let's build together.
Gumbalaya.
Say the people go to hollering.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say we need help now.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say people go to dying.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say we need more hospice.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say we need more houses.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Oh Lord have mercy.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Tell them I got fire.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
They must be hated.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say let's rebuild.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say boy with the highland.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say the flush of Kahuna.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say in your spoon.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
Say wait now, people.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
They must be the governor.
Gumbalaya, anointed fire.
give him some gumbo.
Jambalaya, anointed fire.
Stay hooping and hollering.
Jambalaya, anointed fire.
Stay singing for Friday.
Jambalaya, anointed fire.
Stay down Friday, love it.
Jambalaya, anointed fire.
Say we got together.
Jambalaya, anointed fire.
Tell him we stuck the feather.
Jambalaya, anointed fire.
Who prays for my people?
This is WTUL New Orleans, and you are listening to News and Views, and we have a very special guest in the studio today. The song you were just listening to is off of a brand new CD. You heard it first here by the Batiste Mardi Gras Indian, the Treme Posse. And we have Noonie Man in the studio with us. Noonie, can you... tell us a little bit about what is going to be going on tomorrow. Who's your gang? What's your position? And tell us about the song that we just heard.
All right. So what's going on tomorrow is Mardi Gras. And we're going to meet at St. Bernard in Villery. And Daryl Montana is the big chief of the Yellow Pocahontas. I'm the gang flag. And Mardi Gras, we're going to parade through the city. We don't have a route because the chief just called a route. And so we're going to, you know, have the whole gang. And I think we're going to be the prettiest in the city. And the CD y'all hearing is Gumbalaya Nerdy Fire. And why we came up with that song is the gumbo pot is the gumbo is the for the city of New Orleans. So we came with Gumbalaya Nerdy Fire because my grandma and them used to make a gumbo. And they put chicken legs, ham seasoning, and all that. So we called that Gumbalaya. The Nerdy Fire is the Lord Savior Jesus Christ. And so, you know, that's our new CD. We want everybody to support it. And what we're doing with the CD we're selling, we're going to help other children to make their Mardi Gras suits.
You're making me hungry talking about gumbo. I hope you got to have some of that gumbo ready for tomorrow. And it's going to be cold, too.
We're going to have that gumbalaya.
Great. So you mentioned that you're gang flag.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people aren't familiar with Mardi Gras culture and traditions and how everything came about. Can you explain a little bit about who's the gang flag, who's the spy boy, who's the wild man, who's the chief? What do these positions mean? What do people do? What's their role?
All right. The wild man position is to be wild and look for the gang. The spy boy, he's controlling the gang. When he see the gang, he's like looking for gangs. And he's supposed to be like 3, 4, 5 blocks ahead of the gang. And when he meet a gang, he throw the signal. When he throw the signal, he send it to the gang flag. The gang flag throws the signal to the big chief. And when you throw the signal to the big chief, he decides if he want to meet that gang or he don't. And so, you know, then we got the queens. So the queen is the next thing to the chief. And we protect the queen, you know.
So, and this all dates back to the origins of when the Indians began masking. And back in the day, when I first started learning about the Indians, it was before Katrina. And things were a little different back then. There was still this transition happening between what used to be sort of considered more of a violent culture to now what has become a competition between sewing, dancing, and masking. So can you maybe explain, what is the competition now and what was it?
All right. Way back, it was like they'll meet and they had violence. Then Tootie Montana, who was the big chief of the Yellow Pocahontas, who had passed and gone home to be with the Lord. What he did was he said, let's fight who the prettiest, with the needle and thread. And the needle and thread is the power. So when you sew, they sew to see who's the prettiest and started doing all the violence that they used to do way back.
And the sewing is really intricate, and it all ties in with the culture as well. It's like people see Indians out on the street, and, you know, sometimes I hear folks saying, oh, look, some Indians just popped up out of nowhere, you know, and they're wearing these costumes. And, you know, there's a sort of a disconnect between people's understanding of the culture and what actually goes into producing these suits and what they see. So I know that a lot of Indians, it takes them a year to make a good suit. What all goes into the making of the suits, and when we talk, when you hear people saying who's the prettiest, the competition now, but who's the prettiest Indian? This is unique to New Orleans. You would never hear that in any other city. Can you talk about that a little bit and explain, the intricacies of actually making the sewing circles? I mean, it's a sacred culture, and to a large extent, it has been quite a secretive culture as well. And I think it still is in a lot of cases. But maybe you can just say, like, what happens to, how is a suit made? What goes into it throughout the year?
First of all, when you do it, you got to design your packet, your designs, and you got to know what you want to create. You know, like, when I do my suit, I want to create. Like this year, I'm doing the Predator, so I'm trying to create everything I saw in the Predator, and I'm sewing every bead and everything, and it takes a lot because sometimes you got to stay up 16 hours. People come from work, go straight to the sewing table, back to work, and it takes so much because then it becomes a family thing where the family comes and help you. But it's so sacred because, like, in the Yellow Pocahontas, when we sewing, if we sewing, putting suits together, you cannot come in the house if you ain't gonna touch nothing or you ain't gonna do nothing. But it takes a lot of struggle, and it's like taking food off your table because you gotta put this money to sew. And, you know, I try to make it every year, and if I don't make it, I'd be ready to cry.
Yeah. What would you say to people that have this attitude, like, you know, people or Indians that are masking, why do they spend all their money on all those feathers, on all the beadwork, on the cost of making a suit? Why don't they just not do that and instead, you know, use the money to buy food or whatever other necessities people need to survive? What would you say to those people that have that attitude?
Well, I mean, if you got attitude, that's on you. But why we do this, why we spend all our money as part of the culture, when the Native Americans used to hide the African Americans, and it was sacred, you know, they helped us escape slavery, and then we was already in Africa doing like a massing and sewing and everything. So when the Native Americans and the Mardi Gras Indians got together, it was wild because they taught everybody, you know, they changed what they know. But we spend all our money, and if people got attitude, that's just on them. I mean, I'm going to spend every cent. If I got to sell my shoes to mass, I'm going to do it because it's in my heart. It's part of the culture, and I love it.
Well, it's a beautiful culture, and, you know, I think also it reflects community. And again, before I was in New Orleans before Katrina. I came here in about 2000, and my introduction to the Indians and the social aid and pleasure clubs and, you know, brass bands and so on was through someone who's become one of my closest friends, who's your cousin, Aldo. Hello. Shout out to Aldo. Hey, Aldo, I hope you're listening. And, you know, so there was this the culture back then also was really protectionist, you know.
Yes.
It wasn't commercialized. You really almost had to be, if you weren't part of community or if you weren't in a gang and you were going out to an Indian practice or you were going out to Super Sunday or on Mardi Gras, you know, if you had a camera, you were trying to take video or anything like that. I mean, it was really taboo. You had to be invited. Otherwise, some people, their cameras got smashed, you know. It was just not, it seemed like there was a lot more protection around the traditions and so on, which has changed now after Katrina. That's opened up a lot. Like before Katrina, you couldn't even get a route for a second line unless you knew one of the second line clubs, or you were at a second line and you got the route sheet, which they always hand out for the next parade. and now you can go on different websites and get route sheets on the internet. And it seems like there's been this opening up of the culture a little bit to maybe more, you know, to welcome in, you know, outsiders a little more. Can you talk about your experience with that? Do you feel like the Indian culture in any way is being compromised or threatened by commercialization? How do you feel about that?
Yes, the Indian culture is being commercialized, and you got a lot of commercializing going on with the Indians, and I feel it should not be commercialized. You know, if you listen to the CD, I tried to stay traditional and keep it like the older Indians did it, like the great Tootie Montana and Bo Dalla and all the great chiefs that went home to be with the Lord. But you got to keep it together, you got to keep the tradition, and you just got to put your heart and soul into it. And I be about an Indian 365 days of a year. Every day I'm about an Indian, and I don't try to commercialize the Indian, you know, but that's what they do. And you got your great mayor. When he see the Indians, all he want to do is take pictures, but he ain't creating no money for them. He ain't trying to help them out, and they get all these culture dollars, and Indian go all over the world, tourism, marketing, but where's all the money? Nobody's trying to help the Indians.
Right, you mentioned the mayor. Now, I understand that the first track on your new CD is referencing the mayor, and who else is referenced in that song?
Well, in the song is referenced the mayor. He's out of control, Bobby Jindal, and the other part was George Bush. But we just got the CD out because if you listen, we talking about what happened in Katrina. We talking about what's going on now that the mayor in the office and he's out of control, Bobby Jindal. He's traveling the whole country, and he ain't even worried about the state.
So before Katrina also, I noticed that the neighborhoods were more unified, and gangs, Indian gangs or tribes, people call, there's different terminology that people use to describe Indians. Some say gangs, some say tribes. No matter what neighborhood you were from, there was a structure in the neighborhood. There was a sort of, there was a, I was going to say hierarchy, but that's not the right word to use. But there was an understanding.
Yes.
And it was unified. Neighborhoods were unified, and they had their own, they had their own levels of authority.
Yes.
And after Katrina, there was this idea, there was these different policies and developers and planners that came in that had these ideas that we needed to mix all that up and to make things more equitable. And not that that was that their intentions were bad, but so what happened to the Indians after Katrina when these neighborhoods started getting divided up and cut up? I mean, how did that affect people who mask?
Well, it affect people that mask when the neighborhoods got all split it up. It hurted a lot of people because a lot of people couldn't mask. They didn't have, I want to say, the funds to mask, and they divided the neighborhoods, And now when I look at it, they got all these abandoned buildings, but let's give each tribe a building and let them have resources and structure and give them the kids that want to do the Mardi Gras Indians because that can save their life.
Right, and you actually are working right now on putting together a youth component to your gang.
Yes.
And so, how are you? What resources do you need in order for that to happen? And what is it happening? I mean, what resources do you have?
Well, the resources I have, I want to use the CD. We'll be selling shirts and different things because we don't get no resources from the city. And my goal is to keep this culture alive, but we need the younger people where we can teach them and have the funds and a building and do structured things with them. So once you do that, it'll work. And no is not, if you say no to me, I'm going to keep on doing what I do, and I'm going to find a way to do it for the kids. And I'm going to keep pushing. I just don't accept no.
Right. And that, I think, is testimony to the strength of, how the neighborhoods and this community and the resilience of this community. I mean, the city talks about resilience, but it doesn't seem like they're talking about people who are from here, that stayed here, that weathered the storm and would stay again and do it again, because their heart, there's so much emotion and love for the city to do that. It seems like, you know, the sort of decision makers talk about resilience in terms of money. If they can get money into the city, that is the resilience. But unless the money is shared amongst everyone, then that's a problem.
Yes.
You know, but yet people stay, right?
Yes.
So now I also wanted to ask you about some of the songs that have certain meaning. Like Indian Red is a song that is sacred in the culture. Can you talk about what that song is?
Well, Indian Red is a song when, say, like they have a funeral, a baby come in the world. When you do your practice, you sing Indian Red, and you always end with the song Indian Red. And say, like, if you sang the Our Father prayer, well, Indian Red is the same thing to the Indians. And when you sing that song, when you start practice and end practice, and if somebody come into the world, you sing it.
And at the end of this interview, we'll play that song so everybody will have a chance to hear it. Well, this is Nora. You've been so quiet. Are you curious at all about anything to do with the Indians? What's your experience, and you have any questions for Mr. Noonie Man?
I wanted to hear a little bit more about your relationship to making the costumes. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, we're in the midst of this, like, really intense period of time. There's so many people in our city, and there's so much energy. But you've been sewing hundreds of thousands of beads over the course of the year. And I just wanted to get a little bit of an idea of this making of your suit and how it kind of fits into the patterns of life.
Well, making the suit fits in the patterns of life. I'll give you an example. Say, like, I was dating a girl, and she said I loved Indian soup more than in her, which I really did, because that's part of the culture, you know. And, you know, I sew so many beads, so many stones, and I try every year to be the best. I try to beat my suit. I'm not in competition with other gangs, but I'm in competition with the suit that I made last year. And to me, the needle is the power and thread. That's like my weapon, the stones, the beads, the tambourines. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Get with us and learn about the Indian and put your weapons down and use the needle, the thread, and the beads and the stones and sew your suit, because the suit is the power.
And do you tie it to an understanding of yourself? Are you a different person when you're wearing your suit, or are you a better person? Like, how does that feel for you?
Well, see, I'll be a nice person on one day, but when I put that Indian suit on, it's something you can't explain. It's so magical. When I put my suit and my crown on, I mean, I'm just a different person. And right now, I'm so ready to put this new suit out, and I mean, I'm ready. I can jump all day, jump all night. You might see me walking down the street singing to myself, and you say, oh, he crazy, but I'm not. I'm singing the Indian songs, and I'm fired up, and I mean, this suit is the best one I ever have made.
Can you say that every year?
Huh?
Can you say that every year?
What?
When you've made a suit, can you say, like, this is the best one I've ever made?
Yeah, every year I say that. And somebody asked me, well, Noonie, how you going to beat this suit? I told them they haven't saw the best suit yet.
I love that lesson. You can, you know, always keep going forward. We're always going forward.
Yes.
I want to take this opportunity to say that we are listening on WTUL New Orleans 91.5. I have a public service announcement here. It's brought to you by Planned Parenthood and WTUL New Orleans. Planned Parenthood affiliate health centers provide culturally competent, high-quality, affordable health care to millions of women, men, and teens every year. The New Orleans Planned Parenthood Center on Magazine Street is currently open with limited clinical services, including access to emergency contraception. Emergency contraception can provide prevent pregnancy if taken up to 120 hours following unprotected sex. Their numbers for medical questions or for scheduling an appointment with Planned Parenthood Health Center nearest you are 1-800-230-PLAN and 1-800-230-7526. And we're going to play another song off of the Tremé Posse's new CD. Here we go.
I've heard it over and over. Once you put the suit on, that's the truth. Something just come over you. But when you put your crown on, I can't explain the feeling. You're just a different person.
Coming, it won't be long. Tell my papa that I'm leaving home. Put on my boots, put on my crown. I'm gonna bump the rock on fire. Say, I don't know what they can do. They sound like a rock, but I'm like a fool. Say, I'm going up and I'm coming down. Everybody with a golden crown. I'm down, come out, feeling the freedom of the sea. Till the end time, coming to the wagon wheel. Put on my boots, put on my crown. I'm down, come out, feeling I won't fall out. Say, I don't know what deep in toes. Say, something like a rock, but I like a fruit. Hey, Mambo, hey, hey, Mambo, I run from the door, hey, my God, I pass the need, I be quiet, I've been in trouble, hey, why Mac told you, hey, watch out for Tula, I'm in your ruler, hey, Eagle and Pine, on my mind, hey, Tula, Sunday,
You're listening to News and Views, WTUL New Orleans. We're in the studio today with Noonie Man, who is with the Yellow Pocahontas Gang, gang flag for the tribe. And tomorrow morning, if you're out Mardi Gras, you will be able to see Yellow Pocahontas downtown under the Claiborne Overpass. And he has a new CD. They have a new CD out, the Batiste Mardi Gras Indians. And the name of the CD is the Tremé Posse. And we're going to let you know how you can get the CD at the end of the show. So we were just listening to a track. You were calling out the names of many of the amazing Indian chiefs who have passed on. And you know, it's the culture, as you were pointing out before that track, it's been a real struggle to keep it going, not only because of the lack of resources that people used to have that they don't have anymore, but also there's the problem with the police, NOPD. And I know that the Indians came to some sort of reconciliation with the NOPD a couple of years ago, and there was a consent decree that happened between both parties. But before that, what was going on with NOPD? How did they treat Indians when they came out on Mardi Gras morning, and why? What was going on there?
Well, when certain Indian gangs came out, the police would put the sirens on them, try to run them off the street, and they don't respect Indians. And, you know, they need to go through culture training. Some of the Indians, some of the New Orleans police, because they don't respect the Mardi Gras Indians. And they'll say anything on TV and talk about how they respect the culture, how they love it, but they really don't. They just do that for the commercializing in the media.
So when you say they don't understand it, I guess it seemed to me what was happening is, you know, NOPD, I mean, there was a cultural disconnect for sure. So
yes.
Mardi Gras morning or on St. Joseph's night, which is also a very sacred night of the year for the Indian gangs in New Orleans, NOPD would just see people doing things, but they don't understand why, what's the culture behind, what
yes.
is happening behind the scenes. They don't see the order.
Yes.
They were just seeing what they saw. And so, you know, I was also at some of those events where NOPD would shut them down. And it got so bad to the point where Tootie Montana
yes.
had to go to city council to fight for the culture. What happened that day at city council?
Well, that day, Tootie Montana.
What year was it? What year were we talking about? Do you remember?
I think it was about... I knew it was in 2008 or 9, I think. And Tootie Montana went to the city council because that St. Joseph night, they had a problem uptown with the police trying
to... St. Joseph night, March
yes.
the 19th every year. It's
yeah.
a nighttime event.
Uh-huh. And then they try to harass the Indians, run them off the streets. So Tootie went there, and that day was my birthday. Which was June the 27th, and he was fighting for the Indians and trying to come to some kind of degree with the city council folks. And that's the day he dropped, and he passed on and went on to be with the Lord. And so that's what we try to do. Our chief, who is Tootie Montana's son, Darryl Montana, he always try to meet with the police, make sure everything is right, and make sure the police respect every Indian tribe, because we only one nation, one big nation, you know. And so we got a new group called Nobia, where all the chiefs coming together, and March the 21st is our Mardi Gras ball at the Shelton Hotel, and we trying to bring all the gangs together. But, you know, a lot of times the police just harass you. And when we Tootie went down there, we still have problems with the police. All the city council folks, the mayor, they just say we guarantee the police won't do nothing. And then the police do the same thing. But we keep parading because we waited for that day and we didn't spend our money. So we keep parading, and what it's going to be, whatever it's going to be at the police, it's going to be.
Right. And Tootie, as you said, he actually passed away. He
yes.
dropped.
Fight.
Dead right at
yes.
the podium
yes.
at city council.
Yes.
So it was a really dramatic moment. And I know my own experience after Katrina of going to Indian practices, and that's every Sunday night after starting at Thanksgiving
yes.
on Sunday nights, and then every Sunday up until Mardi Gras, Indians practice at different venues around in different neighborhoods,
yes.
and it's often at a bar. So in Uptown, in the 6th District, I was at an Indian practice, and I could not believe my eyes when the 6th District police came in and they locked down the bar. And I mean, it was basically a raid because people had parked their cars on the neutral ground.
Yes.
And so they used that as an excuse to raid the bar. Yes. And there was a security man outside. I was standing outside, actually, because I was drinking a glass of wine and I couldn't take it in there.
Yes.
It was my own.
Yes.
And so I was outside, and Captain Barty marched in with two officers behind him. They had an officer on every corner. They walked right past the security guard, didn't talk to him at all, pulled the manager out of the bar, threw him up again. And then, this is over at the Club Valette on Martin Luther King near the coroner's office. And then threw them up against the wall next to where they keep the bodies. You know, they have the frozen. They still keep bodies in 40-foot trailers, refrigerator trailers, right behind that. Yeah, the coroner's office.
Yes.
And then after that, the managers, they were let go. But it seemed to me that there was some harassment happening. Yes. Is that still going on? I mean, also, we monitored that bar every Sunday, and there were all kinds of things you wouldn't believe were going on.
Every now and then you get an accident from the police, and they'll do that. You be standing outside, they come harass you. Everybody got to go in the bar. And when you take that, you know, that make a disconnect with Indians because, you know, you want respect, you got to give respect. And the police don't respect the Mardi Gras Indians. They don't. They'll say it on TV, the mayor, the city council, but the police do not respect them. Now, you got some good cops that do respect them, but some cops don't. And I remember a year we had a problem with the police, and they told us, we're going to have police to follow every gang and be out there. And we told them no, because we don't need the police to escort us nowhere, you know. And we be very respectful. So a lot of that is still going on, and that's like an irritation with the Indians and the New Orleans Police Department.
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. When you talk about respect, I think if you give respect, you get respect. And that seems to be lacking in a lot of cases by people who are decision makers that think they know what's best for us. And so rather than listening to what people are actually asking for, because I think people always know what's best for themselves better than anyone else, they have this kind of patronistic attitude where, it's this father knows best philosophy that doesn't work, you know. And I agree. I think that the respect issue is hugely lacking in a lot of cases. So I'm glad that you brought that up. So now, on tomorrow, how does your day go? What happens between now and Mardi Gras morning?
On the Mardi Gras morning, I'm jumping. And I can't wait till Mardi Gras morning. But what goes on, we're going to meet at St. Bernard and Villery right by Tootie Montana's house. And we wait for our big chief to come out. And when the big chief come out, he's going to sing Indian Red. And he's going to call the wild man, the fag boy, the spy boy, the second chief, the trail chief. He's going to call everybody out. And then we continue our route. The chief give the spy boy, the flag boy, the route, and they just go that way. But the chief might change his mind and say, oh, let's go two blocks this way. So whatever the big chief lead the route.
Now, the chief might change his mind, as I understand, because in the past, when the gangs came out on Mardi Gras morning, the spy boys would go out looking to see where the other gangs were because, you know, if a chief might not want to meet another chief
in a
neighborhood. And so that's why the routes are not set, right? Because you don't know where the other gangs are. So where your gang is going to be depends a lot on where other gangs are and what the spy boy is feeding back to the gang flag, which is your position.
Yes.
That goes back to the second chief, is that right?
Yes.
And then the chief. And then you have the wild man that keeps the way clear.
Yes, the wild man keeps it clear.
So all you listeners, if you're listening and you see a wild man out there and he's saying, get back, get back, get back, I would advise you do that, get back.
Yes.
And clear the way for the gang as they're coming through. Nora, did you have anything else you wanted to?
I did want to talk a little bit about freedom of movement. So we were wondering about, like, why are the police harassing? And the example that you provided at the bar, it's not the same as going out and parading and moving around, but it is kind of similar because it's saying, like, where you should be.
Right, and technically, if cars are parked on the neutral ground anywhere else in the city, if it had been St. Charles Avenue, they would have given them a ticket.
That's right.
And they would never have even gone into the bar. They would have gotten these little orange tags. That's what they get.
Right. So there's, you know, if we were standing still and shaking hands, like, that's a show of respect. But what we're describing with the Mardi Gras Indians and moving is you're not just going to stay there and like shake hands. It's not like one moment in time. You're moving around.
That's right.
So I just wanted you to give us a little, you know, tell us your feelings about the route and the your ability to go into a bar, maybe stand outside a bar, and how do you feel about that?
Well, the route is like, I can't wait to meet the other gang because, you know, the Spy Boys meet the Wild Man. We meet different gangs, and I'd be so happy because I know this. I'm the gang flag, and I think I'm the best in the city. And I know my suit going to be pretty, so I'm jumping, doing all that now. If the Indians want to stand outside the bar and they're not harassing nobody at Indian practice or they're not doing nothing, you should not just harass them, because if you take, like, Shamar Allen, and the police beat him, harass
Shamar
him.
Shamar Allen is
a trumpet player.
And a very famous trumpet player in New Orleans.
Uh-huh. Yes. And so they harassed him and took him to jail, and then the state troopers wanted to make everything good, and the mayor wanted to make everything good. And so the police just do that. You can be standing outside. They're going to throw you on a car, and you can say, man, I'm waiting for the Indian practice. Some police just don't connect to the Indians. I think they should have a culture class where these Indian chiefs come in and teach the police about the culture, because New Orleans is rich in culture. And the Indians go all around the world to represent New Orleans, but it's a crying shame how we get treated in our city, but we can go other places and they treat us with royalty.
That brought to mind the idea that we are all students forever, and and you did say that you have done teaching before. Can you tell us about your experience talking to students about...
Well, I love to go out to the schools and talk to the young people, and I love to teach them about the culture. And sometimes we really go through the acts, you know, make one gang a Spy Boy, Flag Boy, Big Chief, do the other gang Spy Boy, Flag Boy, and Big Chief. But the kids be so into it, and they want to do it, but their mamas do not have the money. And so I'm trying to create some kind of industry where I can have the money for the kids, not just for the Yellow Polka Hunters, for all kids. I mean, if this can save them, the city and everybody should come with open arms and welcome this.
Sounds like you have a lot to teach.
Yes.
A lot.
And that actually, also, if we can backtrack just a little bit, too, I know that the city are now, the NOPD are looking for new recruits, and, you know, the police force is really atrophied. And so we need to beef up the police force.
That's right.
Are you at all concerned about, you know, new recruits coming into the force that may not have the same experience?
I'm concerned because when you bring no new recruits, you can bring them in. But if they don't know what a Mardi Gras Indian is, they can see them on the street and they can harass them and do anything, and that can be a bad situation, because if you got your gang, you're on the street, here comes, I want to call a cop, Bo Winkle or something, and he comes up and he say, who are y'all? What y'all doing now? Get on the car, get that. But you got that crowd, and that crowd looking at the cop like, we ain't having this today.
Mm-hmm. And so what are the consequences of arrests? So, there, you know, a lot of underserved and resourced neighborhoods, you see people getting arrested a lot. What are the consequences of that for, say, someone you know who's been arrested?
Yes.
And, you know, what does that do to their life?
Well, they ruin a lot of people because, say you're a Mardi Gras Indian, a musician or a regular person, and you love the Indians or you love the culture, and the police just come arrest you for no reason and give you some charge that you don't even know nothing, you didn't do nothing, and they just arrest you. Now, after they arrest you as a Mardi Gras Indian, and you go to the press or the media, that's when the mayor of the city and them want to come say, oh, we made a mistake. Let's go back to the table and talk. But when you talk to them, ain't nothing happened, because the next week you might get harassed again by the NOPD. So I'm concerned about the recruits. I'm definitely concerned about that. And I think Michael Harrison, who is the police chief, he should look at that, and the city should look at that and make sure to attend the Indians are protected, because it's like our sacred secret. They got to treat us like that.
Right, and as I mentioned, this you're listening to WTOL New Orleans. This is the News and View Show, and we're speaking with Noonie Man from the Yellow Pocahontas Tribe, and they have a new CD out, the Batiste Mardi Gras Indians, and the name of the CD is the Treme Posse. And we're going to tell you at the end of the show how you can get this CD. Noonie is going to give you a number you can call, but I just wanted to say that. Nini, sometimes I call you and I get your voicemail, and your voicemail says, "Don't call my phone if you're a sellout."
Yes.
And when you're talking about the sellouts, who exactly are you speaking with you don't want to call your phone?
Well, I'm talking to a number of people, you know. I'm talking to my family, my brothers, my sisters, community people, preachers, politicians, and all community activists, because if you're going to sell out the culture, and not just the culture, you're going to sell out everything, something is wrong with you, you know. And the city folks, you got a lot of city councilmen sit up there, but there are sellouts. And a lot of people get mad because I tell them in their face. There are three kinds of sellouts, and I'm going to tell them to y'all. You got the pastors that's pimping in the name of Jesus. That's one of the sellouts. The second kind of sellout is the politician selling out, probably the same as the preacher in the name of Jesus. Then you got the community activists, people who getting the money and selling out the community and the neighborhoods. If you look at Katrina been, what, 10 years or probably more? And you look at the night ward. How could you be a legislator, a city councilman, and the mayor, and look at the night ward, $1 billion is spent, and it looked like a third world country?
And I've seen you in action, and I know you're fair. You are you speak your mind, but you do give credit where credit is due.
Yes.
You're not political. You are an issues person.
Yes.
So you deal with things on an issues basis, which I think most of us can relate to. Can you give an example of, I know Big Chief Odalis of the Wild Magnolia,
yeah,
being recently passed away.
Yes.
You mentioned that Council Member Cantrell, she helped arrange his funeral.
Yes.
Can you talk about what happened around that funeral?
Well, around Odalis' funeral, you know, a lot of times when the Indian die, you have a lot of stuff. And Odalis was, I want to say, one of the biggest Indians in New Orleans, because he kicked the dope, and let's be fair, he kicked the dope and it went all around the world. And so we had to treat his funeral like that. And Councilwoman Cantrell, she always step up to the plate. I hear a lot of people say negative things, but that's not true. Councilwoman Cantrell steps up, you know. And so, you know, my hat goes off to her because she stepped up. Now, if you want to get in the city stuff, y'all want to talk about it, I got a couple of people on mine I want to talk about.
Well, what exactly? So the funeral they had at the Carver Theater?
Yes.
Which is kind of an unusual place for a funeral.
Yes,
for
yes.
Me. Usually it's at the repast, is at the bar,
yeah,
or whatever.
Uh-huh.
So I went to the funeral, and I was told that it was going to be $15 to go in to see the body, and I didn't go in. I couldn't really believe
uh-huh.
it. But I guess that wasn't really the case, but... So what happened around that?
Well, at the Carver Theater, a lot of people, you know, don't know the culture. And, you know, he was like $15 for everybody. And they told him he could not do that because you had people coming from out of town. The whole world, they came here to see Odalis. They came they come here to see the Indian chief die, and Bodala funeral was awesome to me. I mean, they gave him what he deserved.
Well, we're getting close to the top of the hour. We usually play Democracy Now at 9 o'clock. So, Nora, I want to hand the mic back to you for, and if you have any last thoughts before we jump into our next segment.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in, Nooni, and we're going to go ahead and play our goodbye song. Can you remind us again about the sacred nature of it?
Any rate, that's the goodbye song. You start your practice, you end like that, and it's a really good song, because a lot of gangs sing the song wrong. And so, you know, Indian Red is the prayer, and I can't wait to hear it tomorrow morning. I can't wait.
And we're going to get some information about how people can purchase your CD.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
And remind people again about where the funds are going and what exactly you're trying to do with that. And the track number for Indian Red.
Yes. The number is 504-872-5056. Ask for Nooni. And remember, if you're a sellout, don't call. But the funds going to go to the kids. We're going to work with the kids and help them. Also, when we made Gumbalaya, we had a church involved. And with that church, we did $25 million of work, because Operation Nehemiah and this other pastor helped build the houses. So a lot of that's going to go to that. But we want to save these young kids. So that's why we came out with the CD. We need a building and we need help. And I hope the city step up to the plate, stop talking, and start walking.
Thanks again, Nooni.
Thank you.
What track is Indian Red?
I think it's number 9.
Number 9. So we're gonna play Indian Red for you, and then we're gonna jump into our next segment. And this has been just a great Lindy Raw day.
Yes.
And we'll be looking for you tomorrow out on Under the Bridge, where if it's raining, at least there'll be some shelter under the
That's
bridge
right.
for you.
Under the bridge, and I'm gonna bring my plastic so I don't get wet.
Mare kumpayo, 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 m My baby.